RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the June 19, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Gavon. I am Jason Politico up here on this week's edition of the show. We are going to take a look back at what happened last weekend. Bellator 222, Rory McDonald advances to the final of the welterweight tournament to set up that rematch with Douglas Lima. Shel Sonnen retires. Koga Horiguchi claims the bantamweight title. Also, Aaron Pico comes up with another loss, so we'll talk about that. Also, we're going to recap last night's episode of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series as two fighters received a UFC contract, but there was one fighter that did not that really became a big topic following those four matchups that took place on Tuesday night at the UFC Apex Center. Then it's going to be the interview portion of the show. You're going to hear my conversations with Calvin Kattar. He's going to recap his win at UFC 238 against Ricardo Lamas. Then you'll hear from Rob Font, who's going to be the co-main event of UFC Greenville on Saturday night as he rematches John Lineker. Then you're going to hear my conversation with Eric Anders, who's going to be fighting next week at the UFC card in Minneapolis. And the final interview is going to be with Alton Cunningham, who's going to be a part of next week's Contender Series as he gets another opportunity on the Contender Series. He's going to be taking on Tony Johnson. Plus, following the interviews, we will preview UFC Greenville, Bellator London, and look ahead to next week's Contender Series matchup. But Daniel, last weekend, it was Bellator 222, and so many storylines coming out of these fights. Obviously, we got the rematch of Douglas Lima and Rory McDonald. Scott Coker says, hey, they really want to do this thing in September. Rory McDonald's like, nah, dog, hold on. I'm not ready to quite come back that quick. Shel Sonnen retires. Aaron Pico loses. Juan Archuleta goes out there and pulls a knockout. He's looking for a title shot. Cody Horiguchi gets a decision win over Darren Caldwell. Fighters that you kind of expected to win. Aaron Pico and Heather Hardy both lose on the fight card. So much happened last Saturday night in Madison Square Garden.
Dude, every fight on the main card mattered. I mean, there's so much that happened, fights that you didn't even mention. You know, Ricky Bandejas losing to Patrick Mix all of a sudden. Mix just hopping on his back following that takedown attempt. You know, Ryzen cutting this deal with Bellator to feature their fighters only for their female star, Rena Kubota, to lose via technical submission. You had the Hooters girl, Larkin Dash, take on Bellator's prized fighter, Valerie Lareda, and Lareda won that fight. So, I mean, literally every fight on the main card mattered. You had four or five takeaways from the prelims. Look, we're going to look ahead to Bellator 223. It doesn't look too great. So if we just take a step back and examine what transpired in New York, in Madison Square Garden, I mean, the winning for Canada did not stop on the basketball court, Jason.
No, I mean, Rory McDonald goes out there and gets the win. And, Neiman Gracie goes out there and, for five rounds, went out there and competed with one of the best in the world. And I was thinking about this. When you think about the biggest fights Bellator can now put on, you look at two fights, and they're both rematches. Rory McDonald versus Douglas Lima, Patricio Pitbull versus Michael Chandler. Obviously, we know for sure that Rory McDonald, Douglas Lima is slated to happen. Obviously, Rory McDonald's more like, hey, we're going to do this on my timetable, which I think, in a way, I have no problem with that because, A, Rory did do the quick turnaround just to make this fight happen. But, to me, they're both great fights, but I would probably say I'm more interested in Rory McDonald, Douglas Lima than I am Pitbull Chandler. But two fights I definitely want to see.
I agree with you. I think the welterweight matchup between McDonald and Lima is the superior fight. I mean, it makes sense for Rory to take some time off. He has literally spent 50 minutes inside the cage since April. And 50 hard minutes against some really talented grapplers and Fitch and Gracie. And that first fight was a rough one. Like, he was going through mud. He talked about how maybe his heart wasn't in it. And I think the general takeaway from everyone watching this performance is this was absolutely a different version of Rory. I mean, this wasn't prime UFC Rory McDonald, but the way he fought, the way he sounded in the post-fight interview, it sounded like he was a lot more locked in his professional mixed martial arts career. Thought he was going to be vulnerable heading into this fight against Neiman Gracie. Upset potential, the way he talked in that post-fight interview against John Fitch. I mean, I didn't even know if it was going to be Rory in the cage. I know John Fitch was in New York ready to cut weight. So Rory did show up, and he showed up in a big-time fashion. But the reason why McDonald Lima is so interesting is, for one, Rory came into Bellator as the establishment, as the established star in the welterweight class. It was Rory McDonald and everyone else in the Bellator roster since Ben Askren decided to part ways with Bellator. Rory was in a class of his own, in my mind, from a talent level. The story of the welterweight division has been Douglas Lima climbing up and potentially surpassing Rory. Their first fight was thrilling. And there, it seems like there's a real vulnerability with McDonald. There's a real likelihood that Lima's going to go in there, pass Rory on the welterweight food chain, and establish himself as like a premier 170-pounder. So not only does that make that fight interesting from a storyline standpoint, but also, simply put, I think those two are going to put on an absolute war. I mean, this fight itself, Gracie McDonald, it wasn't the greatest thing in the world. Because look, we knew what Gracie was going to try and do, and he tried to with his grappling. And there was a near submission attempt several times, even late in the fight. Rory really fended it off. He was a superior striker. And when he did get good body positioning, he landed a nice ground and pound. But he still didn't look like the natural-born killer of old. You know, he didn't look like a straight-up, you know, guy that's going to go in there with Lima and have his way with him. So I'm looking forward to Liam McDonald. But for the love of God, give Rory a break.
Exactly. You know, it's kind of crazy when you think about the biggest storylines from Bellator 222. I don't necessarily think that Roy McDonald is going to be the biggest headline. You know, I mean, obviously, Shel Sonnen retiring. You know, and unfortunately for Lyoto Machida, he went out there and did what he needed to do, you know, to get the victory. And, you know, and I was thinking about this. When we think about the biggest memories we're going to have of Shel Sonnen, in all reality, those memories are losses against Anderson Silva.
The memories are losses, but the memories don't start there. When I think Shel Sonnen, I think of like a cha-ching, like a cash register, just opening it up, overflowing with cash, because that is Shel Sonnen in my mind. When I think of Shel Sonnen, I mean, it's all about how he utilized his mouth to promote himself as a star. And not only that, but make Anderson Silva a star. But in addition to that, as a fight fan, you know, when you think about fights, it's all about the way you feel. You know, it's the memories. You may not remember everything in particular, but you remember who you were with when you watched these big time fights or crazy things happen in the octagon. And I was with my friends. My high school friends watching Anderson Silva, Shel Sonnen. We saw this guy. He talked a lot of crap and he built up a lot of steam. And the way he took down Anderson Silva, a god in MMA, a god, he took him down and beat him down round after round after round. We couldn't believe what we were seeing, Jason. I mean, think about how close Shel Sonnen was in that fight to being middleweight champion of the world. You know, for those who didn't see the fight, you know, Silva locked him to a triangle choke, I believe, and it was all said and done. But Chael was more than just a guy talking a whole lot of crap. He nearly dethroned Anderson Silva in the Spider's prime.
Yeah, I mean, you know, UFC 117. You know, of course, you know, he ultimately fails a drug test. I mean, look, that's going to be a huge part of Shel Sonnen's legacy. Is the drug test failures that he did have. You know, he's going to be you know, an MMA media personality, and you know, he's definitely one of the best you know people you want to listen to in terms of breaking down fights. So you know, we'll see. I believe it's actually working the Bellator show this weekend. You know, Koji Horiguchi, and I had this written down in our notes, and I think, depending on your opinion, go one way or the other, and I wrote down, I go, Horiguchi winning, a good or bad thing for the Bellator bantamweight division? And you know, even though the Bellator bantamweight division may not be the deepest, it's got to be a bad thing just because of he's only contractually obligated to defend the belt one time a year.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. It is a bad thing because only one time a year. I have no – it seems like the working relationship between Ryzen and Bellator is really good, really constructive, and they have a very, very unique idea to collaboration. But if you can only get your champion in there for one time a year, and maybe Horiguchi's going to break bread, but you got to think the vast majority of his fights in a given year will be in Japan in Ryzen. Mm-hmm. So it's likely only going to be one time a year. And as cool as it is to have Horiguchi on your roster as a champion, and it's a great thing because you begin to look at the resume he has put up since losing to Demetrius Johnson as he is, how old is he, 28 years old? And I believe he trains an American top team. Simply put, Bellator, the positive of Kyoji Horiguchi winning the title is Bellator has one of the best fighters on the planet on their roster. That's a positive. You know, a negative, maybe, man, people may not know that. Like what was amazing, by the way, when we did that Sun and segment was, it's crazy, right? How you think of all these historic fights and you could just pull off what number the UFC was on. You're like, oh, boom, UFC 117, Silva Sun, and I know it. But as time progresses, it's just not the same thing. Like, Jason, I would give you $500 right now if you could tell me what the number was for Horiguchi versus Demetrius Johnson. What was the pay-per-view number for that, UFC? If you could do that, I'll give you – I mean, it's more likely Chael knocked out from a flying knee, remember. What was it? What's the number?
Is it 176?
No, but to be honest, Jason is kind of a savant because that was close as hell. UFC 186, you know, you got the six right. So Horiguchi, you know, he unfortunately became one of the best fighters in the world when just people stopped caring at a hard level. But yeah, he almost got it there at 186, but damn. But
here's the thing with Kyoji Horiguchi. The fight you would want to see with him, we know we're not going to see.
Absolutely.
Horiguchi, Henry Cejudo. That's the fight you would want to see, but it'll never happen.
You don't think Bellator and UFC are going to work together?
No. I mean, look, I mean,
well,
you know,
it may happen, just not now.
I mean, Juan Archuleta, you know, he is the clear number one contender for me at 135 pounds. You know, he gets a win over Dantas. Yes, it was a matchup at 145 pounds. You know, and obviously he was making his passionate speech after it. You know, look, you know, he's a guy that, you know, coming up on the regional scene, he fought at 35 and 45, was a dual champion at King of the Cage. I imagine that he would be one of the 16 men that'll be in that 145-pound tournament that is slated to start here in the fall. I mean, look, he is not the number one contender at 145 pounds. Let's make that clear. I saw some people kind of noting that. And we kind of, you know, as sports fans, we live kind of in this moment where I'm like, okay, 45, he's not ahead of AJ McKee. And he's not ahead of Henry Corrales.
Absolutely, but the good thing is that even if he is in that 145-pound tournament, he loses, like, dude, the best days are ahead of Juan Archuleta, even if he loses in this tournament, because you mentioned it, like, the dude's a 135-er. He just took this fight on short notice at 145. He is probably going to be where Bellator needs him because that's just the place Bellator is, but Juan's utmost potential may be at 135, and he's fighting, like, a top-tier Bellator featherweight at 145. I mean, the way he knocked out Eduardo Dantas, I mean, that poor guy was on the canvas for, like, we're talking, that was a Jessica Eye impersonation with how long he was there. And the fight itself wasn't particularly great. I mean, where the money's going to be made, I think, I guess, in the bantamweight division is telling the story of Darian Caldwell's rehabilitation because, he's got the talent level. But he was in his own head. I mean, let's talk about this for a second. Like, this was the ultimate lay and pray rounds 2 through 5 I've ever seen, and he wasn't rewarded for it. The guy on his back in Horiguchi was. So,
And that's great to see.
Yeah, that's great to see. There's money to be made if he takes the initiative and holds himself accountable and rectifies his career and doesn't blame other people for why he didn't get his hand raised.
And the thing about, you know, when you have that type of fighting style, you have to win. Otherwise, that is a fighting style. It doesn't matter if your name's Dana White, Scott Coker, Ray Sefo, or whoever it may be. That's a fighting style that you're just not going to care for. And I'm glad you bring that up because I brought this to your attention. That video that Bellator put out there. Now, it was last week, the UFC puts out the Thrill and Agony of UFC 238, And they show Jessica Eye after being knocked out as she's crying, walking backstage, which part of me is like, why are we showing this? I don't understand that. But now you see the Darian Caldwell situation, and I'm sure by now all of our listeners have seen this, where he is walking back. There is a cameraman who's obviously backpedaling, and he has some things to say. Doesn't really note who he's talking to, if he's talking to the cameraman, he's talking to the producer, or just in general. And, you know, he shoves the cameraman down and the camera goes out, and that's the end of the video. And I think what I text you, Daniel, was this is kind of very interesting that Bellator would put this out there. And it's, I haven't talked to anybody in Bellator about it, so this is just my pure speculation. This has to be Scott Coker sending a message to Darian Caldwell.
I hope so, because this video was real interesting. It was, as a photographer, that's my day job. I work for a news organization, and I get video. What I loved about this video was how authentic it was, because we constantly, as a photographer, try and blend into things and get real emotion, because everyone is so artificial when it comes to they know the camera's on. You get someone angry, sad, happy, ecstatic, whatever, and they're not worried about being fake. You love capturing raw humans. That was raw as hell. Really raw, and probably too raw, given that there was a lot of profanity used. Excuse me. He came across like a very sore loser, and blamed the judges in a very bad way, but really bad profanity, pushing the guy, and he looked like a real ass clown. Like that's just the only way to put it. Not a good look. Not something you want your family to see or your friends. And if you are a promotion trying to protect somebody, not how you want to build one of your top stars. So unless there's just no quality control in Bellator and they're just uploading whatever to their YouTube page.
I can't imagine that, Daniel. I got to think that before that went out, that video is in Scott Coker's email. Are you okay with us releasing it? It's in Rich Chow's email. It's in Mike Kogan's email. And the whole team there has come to the decision to put this out there. I think one of the things that, you know, hearing you talk about this and obviously know what you do, maybe this is Scott Coker's way of saying, you know what, I'm showing my production crew that I'm standing behind them and I'm not going to let my fighters get away with this.
Absolutely. I think that's kind of what it is. And again, if you recorded that on tape, you're totally right. You're going to show it to somebody. You don't want to get fired, right? You're probably not making that much money, and you don't want to just put something like that on air. You want to make sure the higher-ups see it, and they approve it. And I guess you're right, man. And it just seems like a lot of messages are being sent through Bellator cards. I mean, look at the Aaron Pico situation. I mean, that's something that felt like a message being sent, right? Putting him on the prelims. And then look at what transpired in the cage.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing about Pico being on the prelims, I mean, at least I think from A, it gave people a reason to tune into the prelims, and B, what is the fight that you take off the main card?
Well, I was going to tell you beforehand maybe the Dylan Danis fight, but after watching Dylan Danis, man, that was a heck of a performance. Granted, the competition was pretty feasible. But Dylan Danis came across like a star, and even though he called out John Jones and Rory McDonald in his post-fight interview, it made sense in my head why these guys were there. I mean, Mix Bandeja is also a dynamic fight, and I get what you're saying. But yeah, it was absolutely a stacked card.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in terms of Aaron Pico, first time we actually saw him use his wrestling. And, you know, and I know one of the things that I've seen people talk about in terms of Aaron Pico is the matchmaking. And I think people have to understand, look at the history of how Scott Coker builds prospects. This isn't how Scott Coker builds prospects, folks. This Aaron Pico wanted this route. He got this route. And I mean, I don't think you should give up on him. I think unfortunately for Aaron Pico, was there was a narrative put out about him before he even had his first fight, talking about the greatest prospect to come in MMA. Unfortunately, he couldn't control that narrative. You know, and I think that you can't give up on this guy. I think he could still turn around, but the fact is he needs a massive step down in competition.
Yeah, the Adam Braxes of the world are like the worst way to go. This dude hits damn hard. And look, this was a fight that Pico was winning. He used his wrestling, as you said. The vast majority of this fight was Pico's fight, in my opinion. But you take on an undefeated guy who's one hell of a featherweight, a guy who will likely be in the featherweight tournament, I think. And you put him in there, and it's just a recipe for disaster. I mean, we criticized the way they've taken slow approaches to AJ McKee, Michael Page, but that shows why that is done with the what's gone on with Aaron Pico, because like a guy who was projected to be one of the superstars of mixed martial arts is literally one loss away from being 500. 500 in his MMA career. So just a tough loss, and this is just an absolute – he fought a talented fighter in Adam Brax, but – this is a hard reset point for Aaron Pico.
Yeah, it's, you know, and look, I think we shouldn't give up on the kid. I think, look, there is clear, you can see the talent there. It's just whether it ultimately comes out. Of course, you know, you mentioned about Patrick Mix, and man, going in there and, you know, not wasting any time getting that submission win over Ricky Bandejas. Taylor Turner, who was a guest on this podcast a couple weeks ago, she got the win there against Heather Hardy. Valerie Laredo, obviously someone Bellator is trying to build there. You know, Hobson Gracie Jr. getting the armbar submission win. Mike Kimble getting the win. And Phil Hall's getting the win as well.
Yeah, man. In terms of all of those results you just mentioned, I mean, it's just, to me, the one that sticks out the most is definitely Patrick Mix, because he took on a real tough guy in Bandejas and put him away in 66 seconds. So, that was a great fight on paper. It delivered. Bandejas, like Aaron Pico, I think is going to rebound from this. I believe in the talent level of both him and Pico, and I think they'll have success, but you just got to be smart with the matchmaking. But overall, Jason, from the prelims to the main card, I thought Bellator 222 was captivating. It was a major success in Bellator's book, even if like a result such as Horiguchi winning didn't go in their favor. By and large, I thought it was a really well-produced show. Great commentary by Ali Malay McFarland, and just overall, I enjoyed watching the program.
And of course, we'll talk about Bellator's card coming up this weekend in London later on in the podcast. But of course, last night it was the season 3 debut of Dana White's Tuesday Night Contender Series. Soriano and Jorgen De Castro ultimately get signed by the UFC. But you know, really, Daniel, the storyline of what happened last night was Dana White sending a message to every fighter that is going to be on this season of the Contender Series. We're looking for finishes, and don't be ahead on the scorecards. You're en route to a decision victory, and shoot for a double leg with 10 seconds to go.
Yeah. Yeah, man. That's interesting. I mean, let's start off with you, because I know you have a real strong opinion on this. And I think that's a good way to set the scene. So what's kind of your general take for Dana saying this after the fight?
I don't have a huge issue with this. I mean, look, Dana White is looking for fighters that he believes are going to put on entertaining fights. Now, look, Brendan and Bill put on a solid fight last night. Brendan clearly won the fight, but I'm not going to get up in arms because Dana White says, I don't want to sign him. I understand why people are up in arms about it, but I'm just not one of those people. You know what? You know, Brent went out there, had a very solid fight, and to me, I thought he had the top performance of the night. You know, I think in terms of, you know, quote unquote, most deserving fighter to get a contract, he was definitely number one, but I'm not going to sit here and rail on Dana White because he didn't offer him a contract. Dana White is looking for fighters who are going to go for it. And most likely, if Brendan doesn't go for that double leg with 10 seconds to go in the fight, which he was clearly winning, he won all three rounds, he could probably get a UFC contract. And you know, Dale, you know all day, that's all he's been thinking about is, what if I didn't go for that double leg?
I know. And it's, look, Dana's trying to do something here where he's really trying to influence how fighters fight. And it could be it's going to be a positive for his promotion because he wants to put on an entertaining product. And by what he's saying, it's going to force fighters to be entertaining. There's no doubt about it, Jason.
I'll give you an example of when you look at what Dana White is saying. I'll relate it to Dave Feldman, the man who runs Bare Knuckle FC. Now, of course, you know, what he initially said back when, you know, he wasn't happy with how Fire was going to fight, that he wasn't going to, you know, pay him his win bonus or whatever exact quote was. I was listening to an interview that he had. He was here in Tampa promoting the Bare Knuckle event, which will be on Saturday. Well, and I'll mention about that a little later on the show. And he was talking about, he's like, look, if a guy goes in there and I don't like the action, okay, it is what it is. I'm just not going to book him for another fight. I've got no problem with Dave Feldman saying that. Just like I have no problem with Dana White going, you know what? I just didn't like how he went out there and finished the fight. So at this point, I'm not going to give him a contract. I don't blame Dana White for that. You know, and look, you know, I know for a long time, the UFC was the place of where this is where the best fighters fight. But at the end of the day, Daniel, you know this just like I do. This is entertainment. Yes, it's sports. It's entertainment. And unfortunately for Brendan, that double leg cost him a UFC contract.
Yeah, it did. And I understand where Dana's coming from. I understand where you're coming from. My big thing is, it's just like, imagine just taking away a contract from somebody because they shot in for a takedown with 10 seconds late. Like, that's such a minute part of the fight that ended strong, and now you're just going to have guys that, you know, they're going to go in the cage being like, damn, I hope I don't bore Dana White with wrestling. So, I mean, that is a real thing, and it's a tough one to battle. I understand you want to put on entertaining product. You don't want fighters to lay and pray. You don't want guys to play it safe and you know, use their takedowns at the end of rounds instead of ending in a firefight. I totally grasp that. I just find it very weird. Like, it just, I feel a bit uncomfortable with, like, the promoter being like, listen, man, had he not thrown that left hook and had he thrown that body kick, I would have signed him. But I just hate left hooks, so he's not coming aboard. I mean, I get what he's saying, but it was so specific with why he wasn't awarded a contract. And he was clearly the most, maybe not the most talented guy, maybe the word would be like most ready to go fighter. Like, most ready to jump in the UFC fighter the whole night was Brendan with the win over Algeo. That's the only weird thing to me. It's just like, it was so specific. Had he not thrown that takedown, he would have got the deal.
I'm going to sit there. I'm just not going to blame Dana White. Look, Brendan went for a job interview, got paid $10,000, and he didn't get the job.
He mentioned that he had a criminal background.
Did he mention that?
No, I'm just saying, it was like,
Okay.
It goes really well for like 95% of it. And you're like, by the way, like I'm on house arrest. That's why I have an ankle bracelet. Oh, you can't get the job.
Like, yeah, I mean, look.
90% there.
And here's one of the things about these Contender Series deals is there is a 30-day window that the UFC has an opportunity to sign the fighter, even if they don't get a contract. So Brendan may get a contract here later on, but, you know, Dana White may see how people react to this, and he's just going to say, screw you, I'm just not going to sign him. I mean, it's one of these things of, I understand the frustration the MMA fan has with Brendan not getting a contract last night, but I also see it from Dana White's perspective, and I don't blame him. I mean, Jorgen De Castro goes out there, and Alton Meeks had was wrestling. I don't know if the guy threw more than, you know, 5 to 10 strikes from distance. That type of fighting style was not going to get Alton Meeks a contract. But, you know, Jorgen Castro, for the most part, keeps on the feet. Alton did get to the ground a little bit, but he gets a knockout essentially, by leg kicks there. And being a heavyweight, you know, he's going to get that opportunity. You know, he's 32 years old, which is pretty much a prime for heavyweights. You know, he gets contract, and Pumo Haley Soriano, who got the decision win over Jamie Pickett. Soriano, to me, of the four fighters that won last night, I think he has the highest ceiling. I mean, he went out there. Now, you know, the people who are all mad about Brendan, they'll sit there and say, well, Soriano, yes, he went balls to the wall on the feet for the first 10 minutes, but then he used his wrestling in the final 5 minutes to work his way to a decision victory. But to me, after watching those fights last night, he was the guy that I said, I think he has got the highest ceiling.
Yeah, that's kind of why I held myself back when I was about to call Brandon like the most talented guy. I mean, I think it is Puna. I mean, Brandon's probably ready to go. I mean, there's a lot of upside with Puna, Hannah Goldie, the way she performed against Callie Robbins, the grappler. But Puna, definitely the fighter he looked at middleweight, training Extreme Couture, I believe, and really talented. He's got the most upside, but definitely if you're giving a star of the night, mine has to be Jorgen De Castro. I mean, it was the only finish of the night. He was a pretty big underdog, apparently.
Yeah, he was. I want to say Meeks was a 10-1 favorite, and the return on Jorgen was like plus 650.
That's crazy. Watch that fight, man, because Jorgen outclassed him on the feet.
Yeah, I mean, I had an interview with Jorgen leading up to this fight, and he noted to me, he said, "Look, everything about this camp has been about wrestling," and he said, he goes, "Look, he's not going to want to stand with me." And Alton Meeks, as I said, that fighting style was not going to give him a UFC contract last night. But look, at the end of the day, while, I mean, you can talk about Soriano, how I believe he has the highest ceiling out of these four fighters. The takeaway from last night is Dana White sent the message. And when you look at the 10 fighters that are on the Contender Series next Tuesday, you know they all got that message.
But what's interesting is, like, you know, the Contender Series, they pick some of the top contenders across the world. And this is going to be a theme throughout the year. We're going to see wrestlers on the show because they're the top prospects in the sport. Mm-hmm. They get their hand raised more often than not. So I think that the wrestling storyline, using wrestling to lay and score points, I don't think it's ended after week one, Jason.
Here's what you got to do. If you are that wrestler, you got to show the ability of, once you get it to the ground, that you're trying to advance your position and you're trying to stop the fight.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, ground and pound, that's exciting. Submission attempts, that's great. There is a path to victory in Dana White's heart if you're a wrestler. You just have to stay active in a way where you're trying to end the fight.
And, you know, but overall, of course, it was the first event at the UFC Apex, first Contender Series on ESPN+. Plus. Overall, it was a good night of fights, and we'll talk about next week's card here later on in the show. But right now, it is time for the interview portion of the show. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Calvin Kattar as he recaps his win at UFC 238 against Ricardo Lamas. Then you'll hear my conversation with Rob Font, who rematches John Lineker in the co-main event of Saturday's UFC Fight Night card there in Greenville, South Carolina. Then Eric Anderson is going to come on to preview his matchup next week at UFC Minneapolis. And the final conversation you're going to hear is Alton Cunningham, who's going to be a part of next week's Contender Series matchup as he's going to be taking on Tony Johnson. So here's my conversation with Calvin Kattar, Rob Font, Eric Anders, and Alton Cunningham. Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who's coming off a victory, UFC 238, scoring a knockout victory in the first round. Calvin Kattar got the win over Carl Lamas. Back-to-back first-round victories almost exactly at the same time in the fourth minute of the opening round. I got to imagine that this has got to be the highlight of your UFC career to this point.
Yeah, this is the biggest win to date, I'd say. Always the latest one's the biggest one, and now we're on to the next. So I'm excited to be in the second fight of the four-fight contract after the renegotiation and see what see who they sign us up for with next. So we'll see.
I remember when we talked prior to this matchup, you talked about, you know, I want to earn my spot in the top 15. I want to show everyone I'm a top 15 fighter. And now in the UFC rankings, you're number 9. Was that something that you had looked at right after the fight of like, okay, I know I'm a top 10 guy now. Who's next on the hit list?
Yeah, now, you know, we're just proving it every time we step in there that, you know, that we're deserving of the shot and the opportunity. And we're not done yet.
You mentioned about, you know, you love the headline of card, and I know probably headlining in Boston would probably be the bucket list for you. I mean, and I know there was some talk about maybe that could happen, you know, somewhere in the Northeast with yourself. Is that something that you, Tyson, and the UFC are continuing to kind of discuss?
Oh, I'm definitely going to push for it. Just when I thought it couldn't get any better at TD Garden, a headline opportunity would be great. I'm definitely pushing for it, but I'm willing to fight anybody and anyone to have that shot, and we'll see what the higher-ups say. But I'm ready to go when they say that they're coming to Boston.
And of course, we all know now the damage that you put on Ricardo Lamas, finishing the fight. Prior to the ending of the fight, is there something that you did that really stuck out to you of what you're most proud about, obviously, besides the knockout?
Just being patient, being patient and seeing it first and then letting it happen. So, definitely it was a great W for being in enemy territory. It was cool. It was exciting to be on that side for once. And then to fight a guy like Ricardo and get that type of a finish, definitely completed the Chicago trip. I ended up coming back on Tuesday, stayed a couple of days, got a deep dish, saw a game at Wrigley. Had a good time, man. Chicago is great. I can't wait to go back.
I know your manager is a big fan of the pizza. So was he indulging while you're going through your weight cut?
I think he indulges all fight week, and he likes to blame it on me. But I tell him I only start eating really on Saturday, Sunday. You guys eat all week and blame me. I don't get it.
And, of course, I know he was kind of joking with you and Rob about some of the pictures. And, of course, and that's the thing now. And you mentioned before we talk is like, hey, right after this fight's over, I'm going to be there helping Rob get ready for his fight. And when I was talking to Rob earlier this week, he told me that the two of you have already been scouting out South Carolina for golf courses after the fight.
Oh, yeah. We can't wait, man. We visualize this happening. Happy to get mine out of the way. Now it's his turn. And We have a lot of good stuff planned for afterwards, but hopefully that TD Garden the TD Garden fight happens sometime in the fall. This way we don't get too lost afterwards. But both excited about getting good wins and then going out and coming back home and representing for New England.
Amy, for you, we're just now a couple of days since the fight happened. Is it for you? Is it more about just kind of taking care of your body, recovering a little bit before you really truly get back into, hard training?
Yeah, I'm just easing back in, hitting the jacuzzis right now, watching Rob get his sweat in, and just being a teammate right now. So yeah, it's nice. It allows me to be able to chill out a little bit this week. I got a nice plate of sushi here. So recovering well in between my jacuzzi workouts. Things are going good right now. And then after Rob's fight, it will only get better.
And I got to imagine for you, you are paying attention to the top of the featherweight division and the fights that are coming up. Of course, Max and Frankie are coming up here. Are there other fights on the horizon that have your eye?
I'm excited to watch those guys compete. Definitely good to see what's coming up with Aldo. I know he's talking about retiring sometime after this year. So excited to see who he locks his matchup with. And then also to see the matchup between, like you say, Frankie and Holloway is probably the best matchup. And then from there, other than that, I'm ready to just fight whoever they put me in there with. I definitely want to fight someone above me in the rankings. The higher up, the better. And I'll be ready as soon as we get to go.
It's almost one of those things of like, are you kind of that mindset of I gotta be ready at any point, because you never know, there could be a short notice opportunity that comes about your way? Is that kind of a little bit of the mindset?
I'm just trying to stay ready every day, honestly. I'm not trying to stay let off the gas at all. I'm excited to be back in the gym for this week, and then we're ready to get back to work, man, on to the next one. And we haven't signed it yet, but it's coming, so I plan to be ready for it even before it's signed. Should a short notice possibility pops up, then that's why I let Tyson handle all that side. He tells me when it's time to fight. It's a smart decision. We go with it. And my job is just to stay ready and be ready when the time calls.
In terms of Holloway and Edgar, obviously you think of Max's length that he has, but Frankie, pound for pound, one of the toughest guys out there. Is there a particular way you see that fight going down?
I like to say, if I'm going to call a fight, if Frankie's obviously got to get inside, maybe land some takedowns, rough him up a bit. But Max got to keep him at the end of his punches and just do what he does, because it is what it is. But if he, it's really whoever gets off the game plan for each guy, probably would be the one that has a better night, or who can adjust better in between the fight to what's going on, So both guys, I think, are champions. They've proven that and have held the titles before, so they both know what it takes. It should be a great fight, man. I'm really excited to see that matchup.
And, of course, you're helping Rob get ready for John Lineker, the rematch. And, I thought it was really interesting when I talked to Rob, and, he kind of talked about, the first fight, it wasn't there. It just wasn't clicking. There's a lot of things.
But for you, do you get more nervous for his fights as opposed to your own fights just because you're not the one in there kind of controlling everything?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Anytime the teammates fight, man, you know, a lot of times, yeah, we're amped up. So it's a big one. I know he's a totally different fighter now. And, you know, the mental preparation for me going into this one, going into enemy territory, you know, he talked to me a little bit about his time with Lineker, and it had my mindset right going into this fight, you know, to handle what had to be done. But I think he's going to do well, man. Kid's a beast, and he's been training hard for it. He's ready. I know it.
I mean, but there's nothing like that Brazilian crowd of 40,000 people chanting, you're going to die.
Yeah, but he was amped up for it, man. And you know, he didn't get finished. He just, you know, he's a totally different fighter now, and he's going to go out and prove that come next Saturday.
And, of course, we look forward to seeing when your next fight is announced. We'll get you on right before that fight is over. But of course, as always, let everyone know they can find you on social media and, of course, where they can learn all the information about your promotion, Combat Zone.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you. It's Calvin Cater on all the social media platforms. And Combat Zone, www.ccmma.com. Our next show is 8/23. Come check it out if you're in the area. And it was good talking to you, Jason. I look forward to catching up for the next fight.
Joining me now here on the MMA Reporter, man, it's going to get his rematch with John Lineker here at the UFC Fight Night card on here at the end of the month, June 22nd. It is Rob Font. Rob, man, as always, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, initially supposed to take on Cody Stamann. Stamann falls out of the fight. I remember I was talking to Cody and he'd mentioned your name as someone we wanted to fight. I hit up Tyson. I go, hey, just want to let you know, this guy kind of like, oh yeah, we like that fight. We like it. But you get the rematch. Was this a rematch that you were hunting?
Honestly, I've been wanting this fight for a while. Obviously, he's been winning, so I knew it would be tougher to get a rematch with somebody that keeps winning. Then he lost. I was like, oh wow, okay, this could be a potential down the road, you know, type of rematch type thing. And so then when Cody Stamann fell out, it was kind of like, yo, we asked, I hit Tyson, like, man, what do you think about this Lineker, man? You think he'll take it? I know it's, 2 weeks, but, I know he's been kind of, on social media kind of complaining that he's not busy enough like this. I was like, this is like perfect timing. I think we can get it. And, he said, you know what, let me reach out to Sean and get back to you. Then within 30 minutes, we had the fight. So obviously I knew he was going to take it. I just figured the only issue could be his weight. The only reason why I know he would take it, but I figured the only thing that could be a problem is his weight. But obviously he's not. So, we got the fight.
And, when I knew we were going to be talking, I kind of blew my mind. It's been 3 years since the first fight. It doesn't feel like it was that long ago.
No, not at all. Not at all. It's time flies, man. Time flies. And I finally got it back. I've been cheesing all week, man. I asked Tyson, man, like once he gave me the okay, I didn't know how to, I couldn't stay still. I was all over the place, up and down. Like I figured this one I couldn't get it back. You know, obviously, the Pedro and the Sansa fight sucked, but this one hurt more because like it was just I wasn't me. I gave up on myself in there and I mentally wasn't there. I mentally wasn't prepared, to fight in front of 40,000 people. I thought I was, but until I got in there, I was like, wow, this is something different. Like I said, I went from fighting Joey Gomez to which pretty much, no offense to him, was a local fighter. And then to fighting Lineker in front of 40,000 people in a soccer stadium in Brazil. And like, it did shock me. It was a little like overwhelming, I lost focus real quick in that fight, and I vowed to never let that ever happen again.
I know you want to point to everything that went wrong in the fight. Was there anything that you thought went right?
Not really, not really. Like I feel like I was trying to, I wasn't fighting my fight. I was, I was doing a lot of other things for like my coaches and everything. Like, even like the way I walked out, and I was playing too much into the crowd. Like everything, it wasn't me, it was not me. Like I even switched my walkout song because, it's for no reason. Like it just was not me. I should go back and watch the fight, but it's kind of, I can't do it. I can't stomach the watching that fight, man. So I couldn't tell you, but, I know I didn't get hit that much, but then again, I wasn't thrown as much either. So like, it's like, I can't take away too much from that fight. But yeah, I feel at that fight, I did nothing right. I wasn't on my rhythm. Even the warm up felt off. You know, like I was just off that night, and I vowed to never do that again. And even like I wasn't ready to just, you know, die on my shield. I wasn't fully prepared to be like, all right, you know what, we're losing. It is what it is. Just go out there, and if we get knocked out, we get knocked out. I wasn't ready to do that out there. But now I'm a totally different person. I feel like if it comes down to it, you know what I'm saying, we're going to go out swinging.
Did it take you a long time to get over that fight?
Yes. Not going to lie. That one was tough. That was tough because I know I quit on myself. You know, it wasn't necessarily that he was, I'm not saying he's not a good fighter, but I felt like he necessarily wasn't better than me. I got distracted fast. I mentally was like, it was just overwhelming. And like, yeah, that was the hardest one. You know, the Pedro fight, you know, I live with that all day. You know, I got caught. I panicked, wrestled, and he caught me. You know, it was whatever. Asansal, you know, he was just the veteran. You know, he kind of like schooled me. He was kind of like he kind of had a good, great game plan. I could live with that. But that one, it hurt. Like, it really hurt to kind of like even watch that fight. I might have watched that fight maybe twice. But it really hurt because I knew I gave up myself in that fight.
He's coming off that loss against Sanhagen. The crowd that night was not a big fan of you know, kind of, and I think because they were rooting for John to win that fight. What was your takeaway from that fight?
I gave it to Sanhagen. I think he had a real smart game plan. He was nice and long. He picked him apart as far as like staying long and touching. You know. I got to watch it one more time, but at the time I gave it to Sanhagen. But yeah, I mean, I think it was entertaining. I think they stood up the whole time. You know, John was doing what he does, throwing big punches the whole time. And, I got to watch it one more time, but it was a fun fight to watch.
When we think of Lineker, we think of those big strikes that are coming, those looping strikes. But is there something about his game that people don't give him credit for?
I think it's his kicks. You know, he is a very intelligent fighter. And I think he has an underrated ground game for sure. You know, you can see it in some of his fights, in his earlier fights when he was going for like leg locks and, you know, the way he plays his half guard. Like, it's not like he's just a brawler. I think he naturally does that, but I think, you know, he's overall a well-rounded fighter. And but you only see the wild John Lineker, but that's just him. You know, he loves, that's his style, you know, but I think he can technically pick people apart as well.
Of course, everyone knows, you're one of your main training partners is Calvin Kattar coming off that win. And one of the things that me and him talked about was, you know, that New England scene, it's an MMA scene where it's not like the gyms are 10 miles apart. You gotta, you know, he mentioned, you know, 500 plus miles, probably putting your car a week. He mentioned about when he's not the one driving, it's Instagram, various things. When he is driving, it's more audiobooks. For you, when you're having to drive all those miles a week, what do you do to kind of just kind of let the time pass?
I'm big on music. I listen to, a lot of different type of, obviously, music as much as possible. I switch it up a lot. I go from country to jazz to anything to kind of switch up the mood. But same thing, it's audiobooks, podcasts, anything to kind of get the ride to feel a little smoother. Sometimes I'll just call my mom and talk to her for like an hour because like, I know I'm gonna have a long ride and sit there and just chop it up. But it's tricking your mind to forget that you're about to drive 40 minutes, 30 minutes or an hour, you know, sometimes to Rhode Island or Maine or whatever, you know. So it's just getting creative and finding, you know, saying finding different ways to stay focused and not think about that you had an hour drive and an hour drive back and then wake up and do the same thing all over again.
Calvin mentioned me, you know, of course, everything's been about his fight. Now your fight, but they said once that's over, it's hitting the golf links. And he's talking about being a scratch golfer. Now, who's the better golfer?
He's definitely better, but you know, he's been out there a little longer. But I'm catching up. You know, I'm catching up. I'm getting my, you know, I'm getting my birdies on the par threes, you know, I'm getting my pars on those par fours here and there, but, you know, I just can't get off that tee with the driver, man. I just can't get off right. I'm still using my hybrids and stuff like that, but that driver comes in my hand, I'm just all over the place with it.
And are you looking at South Carolina? Have you and Calvin scoped out some golf courses?
That's the first thing we thought about, South Carolina, because, like, we did, we did say, listen, we can't be out there this much for these fights. You know, we got two big fights. We can't be out there like we used to. Like, we got to bring it back. You know what I'm saying? It's early in the summer, so we have plenty of time to play. So let's try, obviously, train a little more. I'm not saying that we didn't train, but we were out there a lot, you know, and that sun, it takes a lot out of you, you know, being out there all day and then trying to go train. But first thing we did, I said, listen, we're going to get these fights, let's go get these W's, and then we're going to tear it up in South Carolina and play as many courses as we possibly can.
Trust me, living in Tampa, you go on that golf course and, you know, you might have some cocktails that you get. It gets really hot real quick.
Yeah. I'm actually going to Clearwater, I'm sorry, St. Pete, right after this fight. So I plan on, obviously, everything goes well, I get this W, I'm going to Myrtle Beach for a little bit, and then I'm going to go to St. Pete for a little bit and visit my mom and everybody, and then hang out in Tampa.
Yeah, we talked about that. Everyone thinks of you as a Northeast guy, but you're actually a Tampa guy. Andres Cooley, the two Tampa guys who've made their way to the Northeast.
Yeah. So I don't know now. You know what I'm saying? I've been in Tampa for 10. I'm in Boston now for 11. So I'm kind of like right there. You know, it's like we're back and forth. But I was actually talking to Tom Gervasi the other day, and he's from New York. And I did live in New York for like 2 years, so he's claiming I'm a New York guy too. So I'm all over the place.
But of course, we look forward to seeing your fight here on June the 22nd, UFC on ESPN Plus number 12 against John Lineker. Rob, as always, appreciate time. Of course, let me know that you find you on social media and the sponsors that have are along for this ride.
My guy, thank you, man. It's Rob Font on Rob S Font on Twitter. Rob_Font on Instagram, and in Facebook is Rob Font. And you know, I just want to give a huge shout out to all my teammates, all my training partners, Uncle Preach Relief, huge shout out to that guy. And then big shout out to Calvin Kattar, man. That was a big W. I can't wait to see how the rankings play out, and I can't wait to see what's coming up for him next.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, man, steps back inside the UFC Octagon here at the end of the month, UFC on ESPN 3. It's Eric Anders. Eric, as always, man, I appreciate time. Relatively quick turnaround for you here. 2 months since we saw you back against Khalil Roundtree. I know that fire mentality is just, let me get right back in there. Was it kind of like Monday morning, you're hitting up your management saying, guys, I need to get this bad feeling in my mouth. Give me another fight.
Man, you know, it wasn't me who hit them up. I guess Vinicius' opponent got hurt, so they need somebody to fill in. And whenever they need somebody to fill in, they know who to call.
Yeah, you're the guy, you know, that doesn't matter the way. Let's go. I mean, did it take you some time to move past the Khalil fight?
I was, you know, obviously very disappointed in my performance. You know, I think that he fought his best fight. I fought my worst fight. And, you know, the combination of the two kind of led, to the fight going the way that it did. So, man, you know, I got a 24-hour rule. Win, lose, or draw. After 24 hours, it's over with. So, you know, learn from it, grow from it, move on. And, you know, they gave me the call pretty short after.
Is that just going back to kind of the football mindset of like, you know, hey, once, you know, 24 is after the game over, you got to move on to the next opponent?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think it's from a competition standpoint, I think when guys like dwell on losses, you know, it kind of hinders their performance, hinders their training for the next fight. And, you know, on the flip side, you know, you have a really good fight, you know, you're riding the wave, you know, you kind of smell yourself a little bit. And get a little cocky and arrogant and whatnot. And, you know, that can be just as bad.
That was an interesting fight in a way of, we had never seen Khalil fight like that. Has it ever been that situation where you've prepared for a fight and then all of a sudden the fire just looks completely different on fight night?
Yeah, you know, that's a perfect example. But I think the thing that he made the most adjustments and progress in is his mental game. You know, if you watch his previous fights, you can kind of tell that, you know, he may be a little timid or, you know, kind of hesitant to pull the trigger a little bit. And, you know, since he started working with Dominique, that hypnotist, you know, I think that, you know, kind of flipped the switch for him. And, man, you know, he definitely came out a different fighter physically and mentally.
And of course, you know, looking at your Instagram, you've been doing a little bit of traveling. You had your anniversary with your wife. You're in Rio. You're in Southern California. You're in Vegas. And I know when you were in Southern California, you got a chance to go to the Wild Card Gym and be and train with Freddie Roach. What was your biggest takeaway just being around Freddie and obviously the great mind that he has?
Man, you know, it was just really cool, man. One of the experiences that I thought, you know, Freddie Roach is, you know, pretty high profile. Trained a lot of champions and great fighters. And, you know, he was really cool, took the time, much more knowledgeable about MMA than I would have took him for, you know. Man, he was just a cool dude, man. We sat down, had a long conversation, you know, kind of picked his brain a little bit and, you know, got some good work in.
And obviously you have, been a guy that's gone around the various gyms. You know, we saw, you know, Mark in your corner along with Chris, in your last fight. I mean, as you've been on this martial arts journey, is one of the things that really jumps out to you is how different various people look at the fight game?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, me personally, I don't know. I don't think that, you know, obviously coaching is a big part of it, but fight night performance is probably a bigger part of it. Because, you know, we've certainly seen people go in there that are less skilled on paper and go out there and get wins against guys that they should lose and vice versa. So I think with my fight in particular, it was a performance thing. You know, it was weird. Just kind of woke up that day and, you know, just really wasn't feeling it. You know, I'm usually pretty eager and excited to get in there and fight. But, you know, just wasn't feeling like myself. And, you know, I think it showed.
Is that one of the worst feelings to have in this game?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially when the guy standing across the octagon there is on fire and having the best fight of his life, you know. So, you know, he certainly put on a clinic and, you know, definitely looking for that to never happen again.
We know there's pressure in every fight. It doesn't matter what you did the time before or two fights before, three fights before. There's pressure every fight. But do you all have that mindset of backs against the wall here? If I don't get the win here, I don't know if I get another opportunity in the UFC?
Oh, man, you know, I really don't. I think a lot of that pressure stems from, you know, guys not wanting to be embarrassed or, you know, them losing half their money. You know, for me, you know, I've got enough, you know, residual income now that if I get cut, you know, I'm cool. You know, my wife works and, you know, we got money coming in, so we're straight. You know, I do this because I love it, because I really like it. And, you know, I'm not worried about going out there and then getting embarrassed or whatever, because there's very few people who get the opportunity to go out there and do what I do and, you know, risk it all like that. So, you know, it is what it is.
Your opponent, Vinicius, lost his UFC debut. He came from the Contender Series, Brazilian version. Obviously, the media thing, when you look at his record, the submissions is a thing that really jumps out to you. As you and your team have gotten ready for this fight, is there something else that has jumped out to you about him?
His jiu-jitsu is, you know, obviously really good. But, you know, he'll stand there and he'll strike, he'll crack, you know. You know, the guy he got knocked out, from Fortis. Who's the guy he lost to?
Oh, God.
Lonzo Manfield.
Yeah.
That dude hits like a brick house, you know. So, you know, that dude hits really hard. So for him to get knocked out by that guy, it's, you know, it's whatever. Manfield, he has a lot and is going to have a lot of knockouts. So, you know, I really don't look at that performance and compare it to mine or how I'm going to fight him or whatever. So, you know, I'm just going to go out there and do what I do.
When you and the team are getting ready for a fight and you go back and you look at your opponent's previous fights, is part of the mindset of, let me try to figure out what their game plan was and maybe try to see if there's a common denominator in how everyone prepared to fight him?
Yeah. You know, I think, with Machida and Theodoro, the game plan was obvious. You know, we're just going to touch and move, stick and move kind of thing. Thiago Santos, you know, that fight was fireworks. Roundtree, man, nobody knew that he was going to do that. And I think the common denominator for me is failing to make adjustments during the fight. So that's something that we've really been working on, as well as volume. You know, I think with Machida and Theodoro, I let them get away with too much. they outstruck me or whatever. And, Vinicius, I don't think he's a high output kind of guy. You know, he'll stand and strike until, you know, he decides it's time to wrestle and try to get it to the ground, which eventually I think he'll try to take it there.
I know we've talked about in the past of you wanting to get off to quicker starts. How is that more mental than it is physical?
I think I take a little bit too long with the feeling out process to see where the fight's going to go, you know, what kind of energy they're bringing, what they're bringing to the table kind of thing. So I think I just need to go out there and impose my will and just, you know, go be me and do what I do and not wait till the second and third round to do so.
I've been asking this question to a lot of fighters, and I just kind of find it fascinating. When the fight starts, what are you looking for?
I'm looking for my opportunities. And I think that's, you know, one of the things that, has led to some of these losses is looking for the opportunity to throw strikes instead of creating the opportunity with like feints, kicks, mixing it up, takedown pressure and things like that. So, we really went back to the drawing board for this camp, and you can expect to see a different Eric Anders in this fight.
I saw a picture you had with Chris Johnson, the former NFL running back, and you mentioned about, the great Chris Johnson. In all your years of being around athletics, Where does a guy like that rank in what you believe is some of the best athletes you've ever been around?
Oh, man, he's got to be towards the top, you know. There's only 7 running backs that have had 2,000-yard seasons. You know, I think there's like 90 running backs in the NFL right now. So, you know, it's not common what he did. And, my wife, she's from Brazil, so she doesn't really know much about American football, so. Man, I was like, man, that's Chris Johnson. And she was like, who? I was like, oh, my God. So I had to give her the breakdown of CJ2K and all that other good stuff. So, just talk about it. You know, I was like, oh, I got to get a picture. And I'm not even like a fanboy like that. But I was like, man, that's CJ2K. I got to get a picture with him.
Have you taken your wife to an Alabama game yet?
I think we went early on. But, man, you know, she grew up watching soccer, you know, soccer.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
American football is too slow. And I feel like that's the problem a lot of foreigners have watching American football is that it's so slow. You know, each play is like 8 seconds and then there's a minute rest versus soccer. You know, it's constant. And then they have the extra time for when they weren't playing. So it's 90 minutes of continuous play.
Oh, I have so much respect for soccer players. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
I mean, to have that cardio, running, I'm sitting there going, I wonder how many miles they run in a 90-minute game.
Some of those guys run like 10 miles in a game.
That's not for me, Eric. It's just not for me.
Yeah, me neither. I'm glad I do indoor sports now.
I mean, will you work on the cardio? Like, are we talking it's like only like, 3-4 miles at a time?
When I run?
Yeah,
man, I'm fighting at 205, so cutting weight's not too much of an issue. So I do all sprint work right now, like hill sprints, stadiums, track work, stuff like that. So the long distance stuff, I don't do too much of fighting at 205.
Yeah, that makes life a little easier, but it is coming up here end of the month. UFC on ESPN3, that'll be on June the 29th. Eric, man, as always, I appreciate time. And of course, let everyone know where they find you on social media and those sponsors that are helping you out.
Man, you guys can check me out Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Eric Anders, ERYKANDERS. And thank you to Infinite CBD, for keeping the recovery on point, and Rev Gear for, I can't train without gear. So, keeping me supplied.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man that's going to be hunting for that UFC contract next week, week 2. Of the Dana White's Contender Series. No longer the Tuesday night Contender Series, just Contender Series. Alex and Cunningham, we were just talking off air about a hashtag contract season. 11 months ago, you were in this similar situation. Did not go that way. Of course, that was at 185. Now you're at 205. What can you take away from that experience 11 months ago to now and having that experience already under your belt?
What I learned, man, is that there's just levels to this shit, man. I learned that, honestly, if you're not mentally prepared, it doesn't matter how you feel physically. You're just going to go in there and everything's just going to go downhill. And everything's got to be in sync. And for me, we went back to the drawing board. We got ready physically, got ready mentally, emotionally, spiritually. And here I am right now.
I'll tell you what, I feel like over like the last month, talking about there's levels to this game has kind of like been what I've talked to so many people about. I mean, do you look, would you say your mindset is totally different right now than it was 11 months ago?
Oh, absolutely. You know, for one, I got a sports psychologist, Mind Lock, with the owner being Dylan Nadler. So, I mean, mentally, we're just making sure that everything is online, in line with me. And also, I've been there. You know, I got the experience. I got to experience that platform. I got to experience that loss, that first loss. I had the worst happen to me, going in there, getting my ass kicked. So what pressure is there for me? So, I mean, it's just going between visualizing, between having consistent routines inside the gym, outside the gym. Everything is clicking for me right now, and I'm excited to show my full potential June 25th.
In terms of now being at 205 as opposed to 185, how does that make training different?
I don't have to worry. Well, for one, I'm always at full energy, always at full energy. I don't have to worry about any weight cut because, I mean, I walk around between 10 pounds, at max 10 pounds overweight. And when I'm not in training camp, maybe like 220, I don't get big at all. So right there, that stress, that's one less stress reliever for me. So, I mean, I'm absolutely and just in the gym enjoying training camp with, instead of having to hit these extra sessions, have to hit an extra cardio session, have to hit an extra pad session or a bag session that's really unnecessary just to try to lose weight or just try to burn some extra calories, if that makes sense. So like this whole week, like, I mean, we're going to go down to Vegas on Friday. I don't have to worry about a weight cut. I mean, I get to eat whatever I want. Not saying I'm eating bad, but I mean, I eat pretty clean. So, I mean, that right there is just one. I mean, that's two less stress that I get to kill right there with between the less training sessions and with me having to eat whole meals. I can eat whole meals. So, I'm absolutely at my full potential no matter what.
And taking on Tony Johnson here, 7-2 record. One of the things, I think there's two things that jump out to you about him is there was a period of inactivity at one point, but also he's an older guy in terms of the contender series at 36 years old. You typically don't see, usually contender series are you know, fighters in their 20s, maybe early 30s, but it's kind of a rarity to see someone at that age. Is there something that has stuck out to you about him?
Well, I know that he's a training partner of Daniel Cormier. I know he's helped out Luke Rockhold and those guys at AKA. He has, a few boxing, professional boxing matches. So, I mean, I know that period of inactivity he was still training and he was doing some boxing matches and all that stuff professionally. So, I mean, I know he's going to come prepared. I know he's going to come and bring his best. And even at light heavyweight and heavyweight, 36 is kind of, you know, I mean, he still has a few years left in the tank, I would say. And whether they gave him the opportunity for just being at a high level gym and whatever Cormier and those guys have said about him, I think I've seen some interviews where Cormier said some good things about him. I mean, which is whatever. But other than that, I mean, I'm not too much worried about his age and all this and that. I'm just worried about going in there and executing my game on this dude and applying that pressure and getting a vicious, vicious knockout.
And we had that viral knockout you had last year when we talked to you about that. You've won back-to-back fights here. I mean, do you walk into this scenario going, look, for me to get that UFC contract, I know I have to do something spectacular. I really have to separate myself. Is that part of the mindset?
Honestly, it's just me doing what I do best. I mean, all my fights are violent. You know, they're all been finishes. I don't need to do anything spectacular. Everything I do is spectacular. You know what I mean? My power is going to separate. It's going to be, I believe my power is really going to be the difference in this fight. And I believe once I touch this dude up, he's going to crumble.
And of course, as we're recording this, it is the day of the season debut of the Contender Series. Are you going to be watching tonight to kind of see what, you know, kind of what that environment looks like now being at the Apex Center as opposed to the old Tough Gym?
Man, I watch every UFC period. I'm a fan of the sport. It's just what I do. I watch it just to get an insight of, what type of performances these guys are bringing. And, I just need to stay. It's just about staying engaged into the sport and whatever I can learn. If I can learn something, a thing or two from these guys watching, whatever they bring, then yeah. But I mean, I'm gonna watch it, enjoy it. And then next week, I'm on next week. So I'm just having, man, honestly, man, it's just, honestly, man, I'm just having fun, man. I'm enjoying this process right now. I'm enjoying the process. I'm grateful to be in this sport. I'm grateful to be where I'm at. And I know I've only scratched the surface of what I'm going to accomplish in the sport. I'm only 25 years old.
I know I was watching an interview you did with James Lynch, and you were talking about Zach Otto. Of course, you know, everyone knows him as the UFC fighter, but also, you know, running gym, being a coach, and you know, of course, also being a fight promoter as well. Is one of the things that maybe he has really conveyed to you is, hey, let's enjoy this process. You know, let's not put too much pressure on ourselves. Is that something that you've learned from him?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Him, my other head coach, Jay Clip. I mean, we know what we bring to the table. We're just like, look, we're going to go over there. We're going to apply that pressure. We're going to bring that violence. You know what I mean? They've been bringing the best out of me in the gym. Yeah, be violent. Hit these pads. Be fucking violent when you hit these pads. Be violent when you freaking when you're sparring. Obviously, not being violent, hurting his training partners, but you know, having that insight of, you know, I mean, what we're gonna do, what we're gonna bring to the table. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
Has that been a hard switch for you to turn in the training room to where maybe, you know, the people around you said, hey, we feel like there is another level that you can go to in terms of just in the training room of. I don't know if it's, you know, showing your full potential, but something along those lines.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously there's a difference between when you do your sparring rounds and your fighting rounds. I mean, sparring is more just about focusing on reaction and timing and technique. I mean, for me, I got a lot of athletic abilities. I think sometimes in my fight, I rely a lot on my athletic abilities. So, for me, the spar rounds that we've been doing, we've been really focusing on that timing and reaction time, and then also the technique, some of the techniques that we want to implement, and just making me a well-versed, well-rounded fighter. Yeah.
One of the terms you hear a lot is blending everything together. You know, mixed martial arts is so many things. It's, you know, striking, wrestling, jiu-jitsu, grappling. And let's talk about putting it all in a blender and making it all come together. Is that something that you feel as you've grown as a martial artist, that you've done a much better job of being able to mix everything together? Or maybe early on, you just weren't able to get that accomplished?
Absolutely, because I've just had more time doing everything, more time getting rounds, more time hitting the pads, more time in the gym working technique, drilling, repetition upon repetition. I'm getting older, so I'm learning. I'm finding new ways to implement certain things mentally. I'm more engaged, challenging myself more in the gym. Okay, I learned this technique. How do I want to implement this in the sparring round? How do I want to implement this? In the gym, get a notebook, write the technique down. When I visualize, when I do my meditation, okay, what did we learn today in the gym? How do I want to implement that? What could I have done better? Things, just small things, just real, real small things like that.
Yeah, the whole visualization, I'm sure you've probably, I mean, would you say you visualize this victory coming in 1,000 different ways?
Oh, yeah. I visualize from whether it's the finish. I visualize just the moment of, I mean, just touching, whether we touch gloves, not touching gloves, the first punch I throw, the first kick I throw, what he's going to throw, what I'm going to look to counter. I honestly just don't see any way I lose this fight, because I have so many ways to finish this fight, and I have so many ways where I can beat him, even if the going gets tough. And like I said, man, we're going to apply that pressure right away. And we're going to go in there. We're going to get the job done. And I'm going to look at Dana White and I'm going to show him I'm going to show him why I'm the one he needs to get that contract to.
Is, and I guess it's more generally speaking, but when that fight starts, what's the first thing you're looking for out of your opponent? Is it just how they're standing?
Honestly, yeah. I'm gonna look him in his eyes. I'm gonna see what he's gonna bring. I'm gonna look him in his eyes. I'm gonna look across that cage. I'm gonna look him in his eyes, and I'm gonna see what type of fighter. I'm gonna know right away what type of fighter I'm dealing with. Whether he's gonna come aggressive, whether he's gonna come collected, and then the fight's gonna start. Whether it's a filling out process, and you know, like I said, we're gonna apply the pressure right out the gate. It's not going to be no freaking filling out process. I'm not looking to go in there and just try to play pitter patter with this dude. I'm looking to go in there and absolutely destroy him, take him out in the best way I know possible.
And of course, it all goes down next Tuesday. Dana White's Contender Series, of course, airs on ESPN Plus. Alton, as always, man, I appreciate time. Of course, I would know anything for you on social media and if there's any sponsors that have been helping you out for this one.
Yeah, so I want to go. Well, first off, I want to give a shout out to my team, Iridium Sports, and then I want to go shout out to Pura Vida, BJJ, and MMA. Give a shout out to my sports psychologist, Dylan Adler, and Mindlock. Give a shout out to my sponsors at Pine Cone. Give a shout out to Wando's Bar. Give a shout out to Danny's Pub. Give a shout out to Venom Gear, BSN Supplements. That's about it, man.
And there was my conversations with Calvin Kattar, Rob Font, Eric Anders, and Alton Cunningham. I appreciate all those fighters coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Of course, if you're not subscribing, rate and review this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. That's a great way to show your support for myself and Daniel Galvan. But Daniel, it is another big weekend in MMA. We've got Bellator on Saturday, UFC on Saturday, Bare Knuckle here in Tampa on Saturday as well. Of course, the Bellator card, you got to kind of move around a little bit on Saturday to watch this one. There'll be Bellator London, which will be three fights live on the Bellator app. That'll start at 5 p.m. Eastern time. The preliminary card will also be shown on the Bellator app. That'll start at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. And then Bellator 223, which will be five other fights, will be shown via tape delay on Paramount and simulcast onto DAZN at 9 p.m. each time. That portion of the card, headlined by Paul Daly and Eric Silva. Then the UFC card, you've got the prelims on ESPN2 starting 4 p.m. Eastern time, and then your main card starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time, headlined by Renato Moicano versus Chan Sung Jung. I think, Daniel, when we start talking about the top five fights of the top fights of the weekend. To me, look,
I was so scared. You're about to ask me for the top five fights of the weekend. Oh man, I was sweating bullets, Jason. This weekend's not great. I mean,
over at the Bellator card, there's clearly two fights that completely stick out to you. That's obviously the middleweight title fight of Gegard Mousasi versus Rafael Lovato Jr. And Paul Daly versus Eric Silva. That should be a very fun fight to watch. The rest of the Bellator card, I feel like it's a little bit of a showcase for James Gallagher taking on Jeremiah Libiano, Fabian Edwards, and then the Mike Shippen Costello Vanstinius fight. That's a nice little fight there as well. Over at the UFC card, I like the main event of Renato Moicano and Chan Sung Jung. I like the rematch of John Lineker, Rob Font. Sign me up for any Brian Barberina fight. That guy's just going to bring the fight. I know you said you're interested in Andrea Lee and Montana De La Rosa, but after that, man, there is not a lot that really sticks out to you. Maybe the UFC debut of Deron Wynn is something that sticks out to you as he's going to be taking on Eric Spicely, but it's not the deepest of MMA weekends.
It's not, man. I'll give you so two talking points and two non-main event talking points in terms of all the fights you just mentioned are great. I'm looking forward to them. One talking point is the one UFC fight I can't wait to see: Matt Wyman coming back to the UFC. The last time he fought was November 2014. competed on the Ultimate Fighter, the one that Diaz won, Nate Diaz. And he's coming back to take on Luis Pena. So, I mean, it's been 5 years since the dude's fought. And, like, literally no one he has fought is – oh, wait. Is Thiago Tavares still in the UFC?
No.
Okay, yeah. Everyone he's fought is, like, not in the
UFC. I remember when this fight was announced. I saw it come across my head, my timeline, and I just went, Matt Wyman's still in the UFC? Because it had been so long, you just completely forgot about him.
Yeah, man, you did, man. It's Matt, I think Handsome Matt Wyland is the name. He may have changed his nickname over time, but yeah, I'm looking forward to that fight. And then the second talking point is the fight I am not looking forward to. Even though it might be good, I don't want to see Melvin Manhoff fight anymore. It's sad because this dude is 43. He's competed in combat sports for a long time, kickboxing, MMA. And he's received so much damage. Last time we saw him in the MMA, he got knocked out. And I just do not want to see Melvin Manhoff fight anymore. As exciting as he has been, but one of the most exciting kickboxers I've seen, I just feel uncomfortable watching a 43-year-old Melvin Manhoff go out there and fight.
No, I'm with you. To me, I when I look at the best fight of the weekend, to me, it's kind of a 1A, 1B type situation with Gegard Mousasi versus Rafael Lovato Jr. and Renato Moicano versus Chan Sung Jung. To me, that's a 1A, 1B situation. And then right underneath that, it's Lineker Font, Daly Silva, Barbarina Brown.
Okay, I like it. I like it. Okay, if you held a gun to my head and you told me, Daniel, which fights do you want to see first? The first fight I would want to see is John Lineker versus Rob Font, just from a pure entertainment standpoint. I think that fight's going to just be amazing in terms of the high-volume striking. The fight between Moicano and Korean Zombie matters more, and that would also be my number two fight. I think both those fights are going to be like fight of like the year contender possibilities. But Lineker Font is the one that I think has the best likelihood to be the best fight of the weekend in terms of in-cage entertainment combined with talented fighters. Number three is Mousasi Lovato. Like, that fight isn't a guarantee to be as exciting as the first two I mentioned, but it matters the most, in my opinion, because Mousasi, one of the best fighters in the world, Lovato, undefeated, earned the title shot. A very interesting challenge for Mousasi, but it is also a fight where I feel very confident in selecting Gegard. And if we are rounding out the four and five, four, I would go Lee De La Rosa. And then five, I would put – it's tough. But I would put Daly Silva ahead of Barbarina Brown by a hair. Even though Barbarina Brown is a pretty damn exciting fight too.
Let me ask you this. Do you have more curiosity in the UFC and Bellator fight cards or Pauly versus Artem at the Bare Knuckle event?
I would go UFC Bellator, but you're going to be in attendance, right, for Bare Knuckle?
Yeah, I bought tickets last Thursday night. I was out with my buddy. I said, hey, so are we going to Bare Knuckle or what? And he goes, yeah, let's go. And so, you know, I hop on Eventbrite, which is where you could buy the tickets at, and I was actually kind of surprised to see, you know, ticket sales are doing pretty well. Because I know when I initially looked, I was like, oh, you know, maybe we'll get the $75 reserve seatings, and all those were gone. And so we ended up getting the $50 reserve seating. I think one of the things that will be very interesting to me is what is the fan reaction to Bare Knuckle? You know, obviously I have seen Bare Knuckle on television. Not necessarily, I wouldn't say it's necessarily something that, you know, it's not something that draws my attention. But with it being here in my hometown, I'm going to go to it. So I'm interested to see if it does change my views of this sport. And maybe being there live, and I'll correlate this to when I started in sports radio back in 2002, I wasn't a hockey person. But the station I worked for was the home of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And so I ended up, part of my job was going to every Lightning home game. And, you know, and I fell in love, you know, with hockey. Hockey's just one of those sports that I think TV just takes so much out of it. So I'm interested in being there. Will it change my opinion on it? You know, obviously there's all this speculation that a certain UFC fighter who happens to be friends. I don't know if you've heard of this guy. His name's Connor. God, what's his last name?
The goober. I mean, where is he going to be? Is he going to be watching Gallagher?
Is he going to be? Here's the thing. If Conor McGregor is in Tampa on Saturday night and I see him sitting there, I'm calling shenanigans right from the start. Because clearly it's him and Paulie trying to set up a boxing fight.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
Here's the crazy thing. I saw this earlier today. Dan Stupp of The Athletic had this, that the betting odds actually went down, that Paulie was minus 290 and now he's at minus 265. Really? If sports betting was legal here in Tampa, because where the bare knuckle event's happening on Saturday is right across the street from a casino, if we had betting legal here in Tampa, I would go place a wager on Paulie.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you got a professional boxer against an MMA fighter in a boxing fight, you pick the boxer. I mean, that's just, you know, you got an MMA fighter against a boxer in an MMA fight, he picked the MMA fighter. I mean, that's been the math since Randy Couture took down James Toney. Yeah, I mean, that's a really low line in my opinion. Like crazy low.
I'm shocked to see that line is that small. I would expected that Paulie, you know, would be minimum 3-1 favorite, but you know, Chris Lieben's on this card. A lot of MMA fighters are on this card. Excuse me, got a little hiccups there. Dakota Cocker is taking on Chris Lieben. Johnny Bedford's on this card. Joey Beltram is on this card. Julian Lane's on this card. Joe Riggs is on this card. Jim Allers is on this card. So there's a lot of MMA fighters that are on this card. So I'm interested to see it. But, you know, obviously interested to see what happens. Obviously, the UFC event going on, the main card going on at the same time as Bare Knuckle. So I'll watch the UFC fights after it. But it'll be interesting to kind of look at combat sports social media on Saturday, just to see kind of where the interest is between the three events.
Yeah, I think it's going to be on Bare Knuckle for sure, especially if Connor's in the building. I mean, that's right for a social media frenzy. But, I mean, you know, nothing on UFC, nothing on Bellator is going to really transcend to the casual fan. Bare Knuckle is the biggest upside that weekend, which is a bit surprising. I mean, I'm looking forward to the card. You know, the one prelim fight I want to see, you know, is the Joe Riggs fight, just because I read a real good article about him on The Athletic that talked about, you know, his career battling back from shooting himself when he was, I think he was like checking out his gun or whatever in his garage, and he shot himself and he was like, damn, I'm going to die. And he didn't. And he got back in front of the UFC. So I really liked his story. But I'm looking forward to see what you think, Jason. But absolutely, to answer your question, I think Bare Knuckle has the most upside in terms of captivating social media. I don't know if it will, but it definitely has the upside.
Yeah, I know somebody who's got basically ringside seats, and they said, do you have any advice for me? I said, don't wear a white T-shirt.
That's a good idea, dude. It's going to be bloody.
Wear a dark color shirt.
It's a thing as old as pro wrestling, man. Blood turns green. Red turns green in combat sports.
You know what I've always, like, it's always like one of my worries when I do cover combat sports sitting on press row. You know what it is?
What is that?
Blood getting on my computer.
Absolutely. It's one thing to get on the shirt, but not the computer.
I'm sure there is some combat sports reporters that has happened at some point in their career. But yeah, I'm you know, next week on the podcast, I'll talk about kind of my thoughts of what I did see. But of course, next Tuesday will be week two of the Contender Series, as we do have five fights scheduled. And a couple of these fighters that I'm familiar with, of course, you heard Alton Cunningham earlier on in the show, taking on Tony Johnson out of AKA, who's 7-2. You know, Kyle Daukaus and Michael Lombardo are two guys that I'm familiar with as well. Kyle fighting up there in the Northeast, Michael Lombardo at ATT, Michael Lombardo, you know, pretty much, you know, a wrestler. He's going to grind you down. And of course, big opportunity here for Kyle Daukaus. Richie Santiago is another guy I'm familiar with. He is a 125er. Of course, he's taking up here at 135, taking on Miles John. You know, when you look at, you know, one of these fights, the records really stick out to you. Zach Zane at 12-7, taking on Justin Gonzalez, who is 9-0. You know, and the thing that I really love about the Contender Series is it really gives you a glimpse of who could potentially be the next stars. Can there be a Sean O'Malley, an Ian Heinisch that come out of this series?
Well, I think there's one that you're looking at in terms of next week. It's Justin Gonzalez, as you mentioned. But in terms of like going forward, man, I have no idea, Jason, but you think that it will happen. It's just one of those things where there are a lot of guys I do not know who are on these lineups, and you do a much better job of kind of inspecting the non-mainstream scene of guys. You talk to a lot of these guys. So I would just say, much like how these fighters in the PFL tournaments always seem to churn up these international guys who are studs, I think there's a killer among us in these Contender Series lineups. And maybe Justin Gonzalez, or look, it might be someone we didn't expect. I mean, we talked about week one, and we did not talk about Jorgen De Castro. We did not hype him up. And look at him. He was, to me, the most impressive guy week one. So looking forward to week two.
At the end of the day, it's for all of these fighters that go on there, it is the biggest opportunity of their life. Because, A, you know, you're not going to find a place on the regional scene where you can make, you know, $5,000 a show, $5,000 a win, unless you are just a unbelievable ticket seller. You know, so that's why, and it is the quickest path to the UFC, and that's why, you know, fighters are wanting to get on this. And, you know, and look, as we said earlier on the show, Dana White has made the message very clear, is you got to go out there and you got to go balls to the wall and you got to show the UFC present. You know, and I think the other thing about this, and, you know, and they go back on the whole Brendan thing, it makes me wonder, is there something else part of this equation we just don't know?
Yeah, I mean, a big part of the equation is it seems like they only pick two guys for a show. So if you get that third guy, you can, like, make a case. I mean, let's say Jorgen, you know, doesn't look too impressive. Maybe Brendan walks away with the contract and but it's just that you don't know. They're filling out cards here, and you never know the motives, because so much goes into a card before the guys even fight, in terms of the matchmaking and how things are done here. So, I'm looking forward to it. And, you know, as always, Jason, I miss Snoop Dogg. I'm looking forward to it. And who knows, maybe one day, when's Dana White making that big announcement, by the way?
Which one?
He's supposed to make some life-changing announcement about MMA.
Oh, that was the UFC Apex.
Oh, that was that?
There's also the rumor that I guess they're going to a 55,000-seat stadium in Australia for Whitaker and Adesanya.
I thought they were going to announce like they're going to do a fight card every day.
That's basically what the – you could see what they're doing with the UFC Apex, you know, is they've now created a venue where, you know, I mean, literally if they wanted to, he mentioned they could do a fight card every 3 hours if they wanted to.
That's insane.
I think what you're ultimately will see is you're going to see a lot of these, you know, shows that are on UFC Fight Pass will just originate, you know, from the Apex. I mean, and look, and you can, it's clear what the UFC is doing. You know, and, you know, he did mention yesterday that they are going to relaunch UFC Fight Pass. You know, I mentioned to see, you know, I think his line yesterday was something about this is going to be one-stop destination for fight fan, which I think at the end of the day is, you know, what's it going to bring for the fan that's just looking for live UFC fight content?
Yeah, it's not the one-stop, because along the stop, they're going to want to stop and watch the good live fights. So, I mean, it's got to be outside the box thinking, and I don't know what it's going to be. And I feel like they're not going to be able to accomplish that goal.
I also think it's tough when, ESPN Plus is $5 a month, and you're asking $10 for Fight Pass.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. When the product just isn't there because ESPN provides that live, interesting product. I mean, so much of the sport is watching these fight cards live. And just having an immense library doesn't work the same way it does for an entertainment company, like a television company or wrestling. Sports is all about the live deal.
I will say, when it comes to Contender Series next week, my favorites to walk away with the contract are Alton Cunningham and Justin Gonzalez.
Yeah, I will note that. I mean, and then you mentioned, what's your thoughts on the Kyle Daukaus Michael Lombardo fight?
I think Daukaus probably gets a submission at some point.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's a, I think that in the day you got to go out there and you got to do something spectacular to get this contract. But you know, the one thing is, look, you go out there and win. There is this 30-day clause that the UFC has to sign. If not, and you go out there and you put on a great performance, maybe Bellator says, you know what, we want to sign you.
You know, if I was Bellator, maybe I would throw a bone Brendan Lungnane's way, be like, hey, bro, we're here for you. I think there's some value there.
Here's the question. For all the people that were so upset about Brendan not getting signed, how many of them are going to go out of their way to watch his next fight?
Zero. Like zero of them?
Yeah.
Roughly zero. That was my calculation.
Yeah. Look, as we said earlier, get the frustration, but for me, I do understand where Dana White is coming from, and look, I don't necessarily agree with a lot of things Dana White does, but I also should mention Liz Carmouche is going to get Valentina Shevchenko. That's man. Did you see Paige VanZant's comments? Basically, say, yeah, Valentina's a scary woman.
I didn't see that, but Paige VanZant is self-aware because she's a scary woman. But hey, that's the fight you mentioned that may have been the toughest challenge for Shevchenko. Just because Carmouche does have the wrestling base. So,
if she can get to the ground.
Yeah, it's a big if. I mean, Shevchenko is going to be a heavy favorite as she was in her last fight.
Oh, yeah. I would. You would probably think she's going to be a 10-1 favorite.
At the very least. And we're talking about probably one of her toughest challengers she'll see in the weight class, which just speaks to how damn talented Valentina Shevchenko is and maybe the issues there are at 125.
Yeah, right now I do not see anyone getting through Valentina Shevchenko. But of course, we'll be back next week to recap what happened this weekend at UFC Greenville, also Bellator London, and also get you ready for UFC Minneapolis. Of course, you can give Daniel a follow on Twitter at Daniel Galvan DGG. Of course, I am at Jason_Floyd on all social media handles, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, all that. So be sure to give me a follow on all those social media channels. Of course, on my Instagram Saturday, I'll have some stuff up there from Bare Knuckle. So that's going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report Podcast, which you hear every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a Forking Around Town with Tracy Guida Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I have to share this hot sauce that you introduced me to, Ian.
Yes.
Truff.
Yes. Truff, I was introduced to it by my kids for Christmas. I opened up a little package and it said Truff on it. I said, what is this? And my daughter said, it's a new hot sauce. And everybody says it's the best hot sauce. So I'm like, all right, whatever. I love hot sauce. Right. So midway through the day, we were eating something. So I opened a hot sauce and I put it on something. And I look at everybody. And everybody's looking at me. I go, everybody try this. And everybody, to a man, to a woman, to a kid, go, that's the best hot sauce I've ever had. Then I looked it up.
Yeah.
It's $17 a bottle. It's expensive.
The bottle almost looks like a cologne bottle.
It does.
Which is really cool, I think.
The whole marketing, branding of it is brilliant, actually.
Well, they have 52,000 followers. They're based out of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, I need to order more because
$17 a bottle.
Hey, I don't care.
No, I understand because I've reordered it. So
I paid $10 for a Tito's yesterday.
That's true. And come that's true, though.
I can take $17 for
You go to a hockey game, you pay $26 for a double Tito's and soda.
Which is ridiculous.
Oh, well, it still tastes good.
But seriously, they I love their Instagram page. They've done some fantastic work with, I mean, I'm just looking at it right now. Mm-hmm. They're actually, you can find them, it's at Sauce, S-A-U-C-E.
You know you're a big company when you're at Sauce.
I know.
It has to be a big company. It has to be backed by somebody big, some big, big company, because you don't get at Sauce anytime soon. But it's worth it. Now they have actually a hotter one that they came out with that I didn't get a chance to taste yet, but I will taste that soon.
And then they have one coming out on June 19th as well.
Forking Around Town with Tracy Guida can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.